Hello and welcome to this special edition of NESG Radio, commemorating the ongoing 30th UN Climate Change Conference, holding in Brazil from November 10th up until the 21st. My name is Ogunekere Noah Olatoye, and I'll be your host for today's episode themed Climate Action and Implementation, Turning Commitments into Results. In today's episode, we'll examine Nigeria's readiness to deliver on its high-level climate goals, especially through innovation, investment, and inclusive policies. Joining me today is someone who works at the intersection of policy, sustainability, and climate action, Dr. Femi Ido Adegoke, who is a member of the NESG Special Task Force on Climate Change Action and Implementation. Dr. Femi, it's a pleasure to have you on the podcast today.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor and a privilege to be here. Thank you very much, Ogunekere.
Thank you very much, sir. So let's begin with a critical issue. What do you see as the biggest barriers to climate policy implementation in Nigeria? And how can we practically and realistically overcome them?
Wow. Okay. Thank you very much. The biggest barriers to climate policy implementation in Nigeria, I can broadly break them down into five or four. One, institutional and governance fragmentation, which is simply the overlapping mandates between federal and state levels, government agencies, that's one. And then weak enforcement on Nigeria's Climate Change Act 2021, yes. Also, Nigeria has NCCC, which is the National Council on Climate Change, which exists, but it's limited. The council is limited in binding authority over some sectors in the country. For example, the oil and gas. That's a major one. And then the second one, I would say, is funding gaps. We know, according to Nigeria's energy transition plan towards our 2060 net zero, says that Nigeria requires about $1.9 trillion by 2060 to actually achieve the net zero. So, and as at now, annually, which means to achieve that between now and 2060, we need over $2 billion annually. And the reliance on our revenues, national revenues, which is budgets, is also a challenge. So the funding gaps are there. There is need for crowd green funding or crowd green investments to be able to achieve climate policy implementation in Nigeria. Also, data and capacity deficit. We know the poor baseline data around emissions of greenhouse gas are unreliable. Also, political economy and corruption. And then finally, I'll say socio-economic pressures, which is the high poverty level, as people in extreme poverty is about 40% of Nigeria. So our priorities are immediate job over long-term climate action. So climate impacts, flood, desertification, and all of that affecting millions annually. These are the barriers that are staring us in the face. And you asked that how do we overcome them? Let me just quickly say that. In overcoming them, we need to be intentional and we need to be dedicated, you know. So the governance, has to be streamlined. The for National Council for Climate Change needs to be empowered, you know, both in operation and in statutory funding. You know, I will suggest that at least 1% of the Federation accounts between states and federal have a joint implementation committee, you know, and that can be actually be replicated in our 6 geopolitical zones. And that can also be like a short-term thing between now and 2026, getting the governance of climate change right, streamlining it. Also, mobilizing finance cannot be overemphasized, though there has been discussion around establishing National Climate Fund, which is blending public, private, and international sources. Also, we need to build capacity, training of thousands of officials via partnerships. Also, we need to look at anti-corruption measures in achieving the climate policy implementation. When you say looking at anti-corruption measures, which means integrate climate projects into EFCC oversight. You understand? Use blockchain for transparent carbon and credit trading. These are things that we need to do, because we seem to be doing a lot. There is motion, but there is no movement. You know, we're doing a lot around climate change. We're doing this, we're doing this, but we're not seeing the progress, because there's so much circumvention and corruption around. So we need to look at anti-corruption measures. So we also need to look at inclusive prioritization, which is linking the climate actions to SDGs to achieve our SDG goal by 2030. For example, what is going on at REA, we're being specific in Nigeria, I think that the Rural Electrification Agency is looking at creating green jobs in solar for 250,000 youths. These are projects that need to be prioritized and make sure it comes to full implementation. These are ways I believe we can overcome some of, if not most, of the barriers facing climate policy implementation in Nigeria. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Femi. You highlighted quite a number of barriers. You had mentioned institutions, governments, data and capacity deficits, and the big elephant in the room, funding gaps. And we find your point on streamlining government particularly interesting. And when you have too many overlapping mandates, it ends up slowing things down more than helping. So it sounds like we need not just more policy, but smarter structures, strategic investments, and a strong workforce to carry the vision. Thank you once again for such expansive response. Which brings me to my next question on how can the federal and subnational governments strengthen coordination to achieve measurable results on climate adaptation and mitigation?
Okay, yeah. It starts, like I said earlier on, I'm going to borrow from what I've said, is strengthening the governance and the interrelationship between the federal and subnational coordination for measurable climate results. So the Climate Change Act of Nigeria mandates coordination, but as at present, only about 15 states have a semblance of a climate dedicated departments, you know. And at the federal level, where we talk about this national determinant contribution, which is a sectoral plan, which often bypasses states. And then the states have their own plan. So we have duplication here and there. So what are the ways that we can solve this problem of institutional overlapping between the federal and the state? So what I would say is that we have a federal system where we have the national body and then we have the federating unit, which is states in this case. I believe there has to be a handshake. So we must have an institutional mechanism which we have a federal and state climate compact, you know, like maybe annual or biannual, or just have an agreement, a binding agreement with key performance index between the state and the federal. Also, we can have a joint task forces which will be sector specific, you know, around agri, environment, you know. So if agri and environment are working together, or their agencies work together to come up with climate smart farming in some northern states where desertification and land degradation has occurred, I think that also will help to further bring in the coordination between federal and states. So there has to be capacity and incentives at federal level and state level, you know. So if there is a set target what to achieve, and then both federal and state come together, agree on the set target, like I said, have a compact either annually or as it suits them, then they can look at the incentives that will come from there as well. So also, there has to be measurable frameworks. You know, in Nigeria now today, we have different frameworks, different policies, different this. But the question is, are they measurable? So we need to adopt a national measurement reporting verification. I will suggest that we do that by 2026, which will be integrated with states' dashboards, trackers, indicators alike. So yeah, I believe when we begin to have such collaborations with measurable frameworks, institutional mechanism, capacity and incentives, it gives us it brings us to a good place for strengthening federal and subnational coordination. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. You have given a very important perspective, and I know we always talk about coordination between the federal and state actors, but hearing your take on it now brings it closer to home. And also your suggestion on aligning climate goals with state development plans, that having the compact, and also establishing task forces or platforms could help reduce the disconnect between the national ambition and the grassroots reality. It's also encouraging to think of a future where both federal and state actors are not working in silos as we are currently doing, but true partners in driving measurable climate results. So thank you once again for that perspective. Moving to the private sector, we have spoken about the federal and subnational levels. So now move to the private sector. How do you think the private capital and business leadership contribute to financing and implementing Nigeria's climate goals?
Okay, that is looking at the role of the private sector in financing and implementing Nigerian climate goals. It's very, very, let me not use unfortunate, that we are not even maximizing the potential contributions from the private sector. You know, the private sector can actually play a huge role in financing and then implementation. You know, finance and private sector can bridge up to 70% of the finance that is required according to our energy transition plan. It says that 70% of the $177 billion needed by 2030 can actually be provided by the private sector. You know, also, I think it was in 2022 or 2023 that in green bonds, $10 billion was raised by the private sector. So this shows that if there are the proper framework and ease of doing things, the private sector has the capacity to a very large extent to bring in finance into the climate goals implementation. Also, technology transfer, innovation, and scaling is also areas where the private sector will or should play a major role in it. So yeah, I think also we can look at the specific roles and mechanisms. You know, look at sectoral implementation around energy, agriculture, and transport. You know, there could be private-led mini grids. You know, also we look at agricultural in the private sector, working with such agribusiness to adopt even if it's 20% of climate smart practices. It will go a long way. Also looking at a transport fleet, like fleet electrification is another way the private sector can come in. And what will be the incentives or enablers for the private sector to be able to play these vital roles? Tax incentives, tax holidays, I'll suggest 3 to 5 years, you know, which needs to be included in the Finance Act. You know, also Nigeria Climate Investment Forum, I think that was done last year, needs to be maybe if not annual, but every 2 years program, or annual this time, because now we're running late, or we're almost behind time with our climate action implementations. So last year, the Climate Investment Forum actually raised about $500 million in pledges. So yes, I believe these are vital areas and roles that the private sector can play in financing and implementing Nigerian and achieving Nigeria's climate goals. Thank you.
Thank you. You made a powerful case for the private sector involvement. And you also made it clear that the private sector is not just a money-making machine or source of funding, but also a vital driver of innovation and implementation. I particularly like the point of a task incentive or enablers, and you mentioned the task incentive holiday. I really hope that this is something we can tap into so that the private sector sees potential in doing this. And beyond large corporates, and from my little understanding, I believe there's also a role for the SMEs and startups in the climate value chain, especially, absolutely, yes, around clean tech and renewable solutions. So yeah, thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. There's often a perceived tension between economic growth and environmental sustainability. How can industries strike a balance, remaining competitive while being climate responsible?
Well, this is a very, it's a very tricky one, but with my private driven experience and policy advocacy, policy development involvement, I would say that balancing the framework will involve competitiveness, risk, and opportunities. You know, for competitiveness risk, decarbonization cost could raise energy prices by 20-30% in short term. You know, every new technology will be have cost implementation at the beginning. I mean, green, clean technology, you know, and impacting manufacturing as well. But the opportunities abound as well. Opportunities of green exports and efficiency gains, which could save billions of dollars per year through our energy transition plan. But industry-specific balance as well needs to be looked at. For example, the oil and gas, the manufacturing, the agriculture. For the oil and gas, transition to gas as bridge, you know, fuel investment and competitiveness. Also, in the manufacturing, the energy efficiency also will reduce cost from almost up to almost 20%, according to the World Bank. So for agriculture, we look at the climate resilient crops, which maintains yields even between 1 to 2 degrees warming. So these are the balancing the framework approach that we can look at. Also, I'll say the practical steps that businesses can look at to align with the energy transition plan to achieving net zero by 2060 is looking at going renewables. As what our energy transition plan says, that we should achieve 30% renewables by 2030. So I would say that businesses should also look at these roadmap, or look at what is practicable to their various businesses, which will look at access and plan towards energy transition, switching to renewables, you know, which aids, which have all efficiency and innovation, and also finance and compliance. Then the use of digital tools for monitoring is also another way to balance the economic and competitiveness with climate responsibility. You know, I believe these are practical steps that businesses can align with Nigeria's energy transition plan.
Yes, they are. They really are practical steps. And you framed this issue very well, because you've spoken about balancing growth and sustainability. And it shouldn't be a contradiction. It should be an opportunity for our country in particular to grow, especially speaking on energy efficiency practices that we need to adopt and gradually transition to cleaner technologies. It's both practical and, I must say, something we can achieve, even if we're thinking of small businesses. And aligning with Nigeria's energy transition plan, it shouldn't be rocket science. It shouldn't be something that we strive so hard to do. You had said something about measurable steps, and it's something we can start with. Yes, save costs, build credibility, save water, save energy, save as much as it. Yes. Thank you very much, sir. So coming to our last question, no national climate plan can succeed without public understanding and the buy-in of the citizens. What role do you believe climate education and awareness play in achieving long-term sustainability goals in Nigeria?
Okay, yes. The role of climate education and awareness, it's both short-term, medium-term, and long-term in achieving sustainability goals in Nigeria. You know, is the role of climate education and awareness is very critical. It drives behavioral change, and over 70% of Nigerians are unaware of personal carbon footprint as at, I think, 2023 survey, what it says. You know, awareness and education on climate builds human capital for green economy. It ensures policy legitimacy, because when we make policy or we have roadmap plan for people who don't even understand the policy, how do we expect to achieve it? So it gives or ensures policy legitimacy. So the impact pathways, like I said earlier on, is short term and long term, even medium term. So we need to set some targets. What are we to achieve with the climate education and awareness on the short term and on the long term? You know, we should increase adoption of climate education and awareness, even in our curriculum. You know, mass awareness campaign at national, at states, at local government, using all available media, print media, the NTA, social media, even engaging media influencers. And, you know, even engaging our movie industry as well. If we can do that and we set a target of reaching 100 million Nigerians via these various channels, we would have gone a long way to educate our citizens or society about climate education awareness. Also, looking at the community level as well, and setting numbers and in thousands, if not in millions, and doing it in local languages, you know, let people have that ownership. You know, let the community have ownership of what we're talking about. They understand it, speaking in their own language, because they feel the impact or the negative impact of climate change. So they feel it, they know it. So if we can translate or educate in the language that they understand and they can relate with, I believe the ownership and the long-term sustainability goals will be achieved. Also, we looked at the higher education, universities, the vocational studies, the polytechnics, you know, needs to be. There are a few ones who are doing it, but it needs to, I believe it should be mandatory for every higher institutions to take climate education and awareness more serious. And then we should also have metrics to track via annual surveys, and then set targets. And then we can have like what I always call green competition at various levels, at local government levels, at state levels, at secondary school. Yes, some secondary schools are already doing that, doing that competition. I know in Lagos there is this green competition among secondary schools, but we should take it down to even the basic, the primary schools, and then look at local government as well, local government's competitiveness on climate education awareness, you know, at state level, which I believe this will help us achieve sustainability for our long-term long-term sustainability goals. So yes, those are, for me, behavioral and attitudinal change can never be overemphasized. That's where we need to start from. Because as at present, as I said earlier, over 70% of our population are unaware of their personal impact or carbon footprint as at 2023 survey. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, sir. Over 70% of our population are currently unaware. That's a powerful one. And because public understanding is the basic to even get something done. And without the public understanding, the policies may struggle to gain any traction. And your idea of embedding climate education into school curricula is spot on. It's about shaping the next generation to become environmentally conscious. Even some of us that are past that higher education, we still struggle to even understand the basics. And it's just opportunities like this that provide for people to say, oh, let's go and learn about it more. When people understand, they act. And that's really the bridge between policy and people-driven project and progress. It's not just about the government making policies, but who are they making the policies for? Need to understand why they are being made. So in a minute, could you just give us your closing thoughts on everything we have discussed and maybe some things you'd like to share about the ongoing COP30?
Thank you very much. So yes, I know this podcast is in the spirit of the UNFCCC COP30, the 30th edition of Conference of Parties on Climate Change that is currently going on in Brazil. You know, it's good and it's a pivotal moment in the global climate diplomacy. You know, as presently the world is grappling with surpassing the 1.5 degrees centigrade warming threshold, which is above pre-industrial levels. But I want to say that in Nigerian context, we can leverage on our existing frameworks and be practicable for scalable impact. And we should begin to do the little things that we ignore that counts towards the climate change or building climate resilience or strengthening our climate action policy frameworks, you know, because if we don't do those basics, we cannot build on them. So I will say that I wish to see more actions, more implementations than talk shows. Thank you.
More actions, more implementations than talk shows. That's a very strong closing. Once again, we want to thank you for your insightful and meaningful thoughts that you have shared today. Today's conversation has shown us that climate implementation is not just a government responsibility. It requires collaboration across all sectors. Our key takeaways are the need for stronger coordination between federal and state actors, a proactive role for the private sector in financing climate action, and not just financing, also driving implementation and innovation, the importance of green innovation and responsible industrial strategies, and the undeniable power of education, both at the community, at the national and state level in shifting national climate behavior. Attitudinal change is very important. And like you said, more actions rather than talk shows. So as we move toward COP30, or as COP30 unfolds, the global spotlight's on action, not just ambition. And we hope that this serves as a call to action for all of us, policymakers, business leaders, and citizens alike. I want to thank Dr. Femi once again for coming on this session of the NESG Radio. And I want to thank all our listeners. Thank you all for listening to the NESG Radio. I am Ogenekere Nwaolatoye. Until next time, stay informed, stay engaged, and stay committed to building a climate resilient Nigeria. Thank you.